This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Good afternoon, Melbourne. This is Joy 94.9. This is The Escape Hour, your food and travel show. Welcome to Saturday. It's been a beautiful morning. We've had a great time. It's football grand final season. Who doesn't like seeing those men in their skimpy shorts? Fiona Brooke, you're on the panel.
I love seeing those men in the skimpy shorts.
Don't they look fabulous? How about
they
those?
They do. What about those physiques?
Oh, I tell you what. Oh, I know. If I could get myself into massaging in one of those change rooms, I'd be in heaven, I would, Fiona.
I know what. I think it would be really nice to be at the chick at the goal square.
Oh,
they've
yes.
got chicks at the goal square now. And
thumbs
they're doing
up for you.
Amazing job of swinging those flags.
Who do you barrack for, Fiona?
I actually have to say that I barrack for the partner's team.
Which is?
At the moment, the Sydney Swans.
Oh, go Swanners.
Yeah, go yep. Swanners. They're playing a massive game this evening with GWS.
Oh, okay. Well,
it's the Sydney Derby, so, you know, I'll be spending a little bit of time doing that this afternoon, drinking champagne, no doubt.
Oh, have fun.
Yeah. Why drink beer when you're watching footy? Drink champagne instead.
Well, I'm from Geelong, so a Cats supporter.
last night.
Oh, no, it wasn't good, was it?
No, it was bad.
One minute we're there and the next minute we're gone. Poor old Adelaide.
I have to say, they all looked like quite sulky boys coming off last night.
Well, you know, we do like to wear handbags. We can have a bit of a cry every now and then, us Catters. Our other musketeer is here today, and that is Stéphane Bonchon, or whatever you... I can't... Never can say your surname. How are you today?
Bonchon. I'm very well, thank you.
Oh, I like that. Who do you barrack for,
Stéphane? I'm not sure what you were talking about.
I think you have to refer to it as AFL, because you say football, that means a different thing.
Yeah, football soccer. I've got no idea who I'm barracking for. I've been told I should follow Geelong Cats. I've been told I should follow other people. So I just, whoever you want me to.
Okay, so you're not one-eyed with anybody. You just like the physiques.
And the studies, those shorts.
Does your boyfriend barrack for anyone?
No.
Damn, we'll have to give them a tame.
Husband.
We will have to give
him
a tame.
Husband.
Oh, you're married. That's right.
Oh, my goodness.
Congratulations. Should we put that ABBA song on now? I do.
Or you did in this case.
Well, this brings us to some exciting news about what's been happening in India this week.
Yes.
Please update us, Stéphane.
Well, it's big news for LGBTIQ rights in India because obviously there was the repeal of this quite antedated UK colonial law. Banning same-sex relationships. So same-sex relationships are now legal in India. And I think we had a India show a while back where we talked about that, and it was to be careful. But now, clearly, it's legal. I think we probably still have to be a little bit careful in terms of social attitude towards it. So that's a big news.
Oh, very exciting times for India. And plus, I've travelled to India with one of our guests today, David, and we have certainly, while you're there, obviously men will be men. You pop on Grindr and you have a look, and because the laws weren't pro-gay, lesbian, GLBTI, there were no faces shown men. So you'd have to go and meet them and have a cup of tea with them like we used to in the olden days before they had the apps. You would go and meet them somewhere and have a nice cup of tea, and then if you liked each other, you'd go out and have another cup of tea and another cup of tea until you got to third base. But that's good news for India. Congratulations. We're very happy for you, and we hope that same-sex marriage is next for you, but that's excellent news.
And I know there's a lot of... campaigning for the same thing to happen in Singapore, because Singapore is still governed by this same colonial.
Yeah, very traditional in our Asian neighbours' countries, aren't they? They haven't quite got the freedoms that we have, so we're very lucky here in Australia and other Western democracies where we have equal rights for our community and same-sex marriage. So it's pretty wonderful. Other things that have been happening in travel this week, obviously the early bird deals are on.
So, well, I got sent a link to an early bird deal for the UK.
Well, I didn't know you'd lost your job.
I fired myself.
What are the benefits like?
I was sent a link.
Yes.
To early bird London, which I'm considering going to next year. for my partner's 50th birthday, and it was like $1,000 and $1,099.
Look, it's insane, and we love insane specials. So if you're a travel bug and you need to head overseas, the month of September and October is the time of the year where the airlines go completely gaga and release all their specials for 2019.
Is there anything that people should be aware of when they're buying early birds, Russ?
Okay, well, here's the bottom line is that there are fees that come with changes. So where the airlines make up their differences with those people who are, a bit snap-happy on the old computer, or they go in and say to their travel agent, I want that and I want it now, you need to read the terms and conditions, because you will be charged fees to change a booking. And normally these early bird airfares are so cheap that they're also non-refundable. So you are committing yourself months and months in advance, and there are change fees to pay, and the airfares are non-refundable, but they are cheap. You can get to London for $1,000. You can go anywhere in Europe for, you know, that $1,000, $1,200. So it's a good time to travel. Mm. What about you? You'll be going back to France soon, I hear.
November, yes. Yeah. Well, December.
Oh, that'll be lovely. Yes. Are we all planning our summer holidays right now? In your case, winter holiday?
Winter holiday for me.
Well, I'm off soon too. Yeah,
where are you off to?
Well, I'm doing ASIA this year, so I'm going...
ASIA?
ASIA, I'm right
into
it this year.
That sounds fantastic.
So going to a bit of Laos, a bit of Indonesia, a bit of Thailand. It's all going to be go, go, go. We're going to hip-hopping all over those Asian countries and having a great old time.
Well, I'm off to Asia as well, and I'm off to Japan very soon, which I can't wait. I'm going to Halloween. I think maybe I've been repeating myself. I'm going to Halloween in Tokyo.
Well, you're going to frock up, though. You love a good dress up, don't you?
Can't wait.
You do love a good dress. Well, listen, today is our Korea show.
Speaking of Asia.
Now, I know we have to go to a break in a moment, but we've got two fabulous guests today, so we're not going to muck around anymore. We need to get right into it. Hello in Korean is Anyong. So we'll be coming back after this break to say Anyong to our fellow guests. And Korea is such a glorious country. If you'd like to know anything about Korea, how do they contact us today, Fiona?
0427 Joy 949. 0427 Joy 949.
Silly today, aren't you?
Phone 1300 Joy 949. Email on air at joy.org.au. If you call the front desk, you can speak to the lovely Alex.
We could always put a message on our Facebook page.
Well, Stefan, the Escape Hour. You are really happy with that Facebook page, aren't you? You love getting on there, and I notice that you like everything that goes on there, which we love, so the Escape Hour Facebook page.
Yeah. Well, we need at least one person that likes the post.
Okay,
well,
in one hour, you're going to see us eating kimchi on there. We'll be back straight after these messages.
And our message is a live read. Why not check out one of Joy's great podcasts?
Ooh.
Miss Breakfast? No problem, because you can check out the best moments from Joy Breakfast.
Those breakfast shows are amazing, aren't they, Fiona?
They are. The Brekkie Bears, yum, as they discuss the pros and cons of human babies versus fur babies.
Grr.
Make sure you check out the What Happens If podcast. This week's topic, What Happens If the World Ends.
Oh, what? How uplifting.
And on the Outtakes podcast, the team speak to the incredible Desiree Arkavan. I should have checked the pronunciation beforehand. Arkavan, director of the exciting new film, The Miseducation of Cameron Post.
Oh.
Joy podcasts, where you want them, when you want them.
Love those podcasts.
There you go. That was our ad break. Now,
We're back, are we?
Yeah, that's
how exciting. Well, that's great
exactly
news.
It.
Okay, so shall we introduce
our
guests?
Yes, we should introduce
Anyong to our guests. So go right ahead, Stefan.
So today we've got Rhonda Brown with us, who's going to talk to us. How are you, Rhonda?
I'm good, thanks, Stefan.
And David Gale.
Great to be here.
David Gale, you're from Joy 94.9. You're
No, just be listening on Mondays 12 to 4, bringing you Melbourne's most uplifting music mix. And that number, 0427 Joy 949. If you've got any questions about Korea, make sure you send in a message now, because although I think our combined knowledge may be small, I think we might have enough to be able to answer your questions.
Rhonda, when were you in Korea?
Oh, look, it was 3 years ago. I was shocked when I saw that this morning. I have to go back.
And what were your initial thoughts?
Oh, look, I was overwhelmed because I was in Bashan. That was where I landed. I was there for a conference, and the first day out and about in the town, I was taken to the Chakati fish market, which is an absolute must for anyone who goes to South Korea. And it was overwhelming in the senses. You know, there was fish everywhere, there were people everywhere, there were people working really hard, and there are even people eating live fish in the market.
Now, I've heard about this. What's that? Did you try?
I did not. I just couldn't, to be honest. And my guide actually couldn't either, even though she is Korean herself, cannot eat fish live.
It's a bit of a delicacy over there, isn't it?
Yeah. It is indeed. And literally, octopus crawling on the plates. But apparently it is the best way to eat seafood because you can't get it fresher.
Well, no. That's true. That's true. That is very true. Well, I don't blame you for not trying that. Rhonda, would you have tried that, David Kao, in, look, not, in Korea?
You don't have to eat live food in Korea. Now, I just want to, just in case anybody's thinking about going there, the food is sensational. Oh. Think straight away Korean barbecue, and everybody loves a Korean barbecue. And if you don't, think about a beautiful big bowl of, I call it bibimbap boo, but it's actually bibimbap, and the bowls are fantastic. The food is so accessible. It's not expensive. It's everywhere. It's very similar to, and I think you would have found the same thing, if you've been to Tokyo, you go down any laneway and there'll be restaurants all the way up and down, and you can just choose anyone, whether they speak English or not. There's always great food on offer, not expensive, high, high quality. What do you think, Russ? Do you think it was great quality?
Best food I've ever eaten. I've just got a mouthful of kimchi in my mouth as we speak.
That's why I thought I'd ask.
Kimchi is a cabbage dish. It's good for you. It cleans out the gut. It's also very yummy. Rhonda, you yourself said that when we walked in today with only one type of kimchi, you were expecting the other 14 courses to be coming in with it.
Well, I was really, because Koreans, the way they eat really is with side dishes. Mm. So you eat multiple side dishes, up to 13, 14 side dishes, and kimchi features in every meal. Mm. For those of you that don't know kimchi, it's a fermented cabbage or radish that's fermented with lots of chili, sometimes some fruit, sometimes some other vegetables. And there are many varieties. I think we found this morning there are 250 odd varieties of kimchi. They eat it for breakfast, dinner, and tea. So it comes with, you know, for lunch and tea. It comes with every meal, and it's a must. But yes, they have lots and lots of small dishes. So things, they always have rice, they always have soup, they always have some sort of meat on the table and some sort of fish in some way, and also lots of other fermented things like soya beans and soya bean pastes and pickled garlic. David, did you eat a lot of pickled garlic?
Just any pickled vegetables, bring them on. But at the same time, having said that, if you don't like kimchi, and a lot of my friends said, oh, I can't stand kimchi, I can't go to Korea, it's always just a little tiny side dish, and they do worship kimchi in Korea. There is a kimchi museum, which I didn't manage to get to go and see. I couldn't think of anything more boring, but at the same time, they do worship kimchi. And if it is the most important thing because of digestion, I suppose. But if you don't like kimchi, there is so much else in food. There's some great little pickled vegetables. I adore pickled vegetables. I can't remember what we had, but, you know, you just try them all and you just go, wow. They really have food to a certain art form. Probably not as comprehensive a variation as maybe Japanese food. There'd be more discernible cuisines. But the food that they do have, it's always fresh, lots of ingredients, so it's going to be good for you. I always believe any meal that has a lot of ingredients is, you know, we're told to eat a balanced diet, but they certainly do in Korea, because there's lots of little ingredients to make up the whole, a little bit like the society in a way too. But the food is just exceptionally fresh. Even at night time, I noticed when in Seoul the railway station shops close, late at night there's old women there selling vegetables on these very neat tables and very neatly arranged vegetables. And I've been since told they actually don't need the money. That would be, I thought they were the poor people coming out, but in fact it's a very wealthy economy. And these people sell whatever they've grown on these very neat tables with very neat arrangements of vegetables. Do you remember those?
I do remember those. Not that we bought a kumquat or anything, but
no,
that was
or even a root vegetable.
Even that's correct. So what we've learnt about the Koreans is they are very healthy people. So if you look at them and the Japanese, they are the most least obese people in the
living
world
forever.
Because they graze all day and they eat all of this healthy food. What did you think of Busan, Rhonda?
Well, I think for me that was probably more Korean in a way than Seoul. Seoul is like any big city that you go to anywhere in the world. It's amazing. We'll get to Seoul in a minute. But Busan was more what I would think is a regional city in Australia, so somewhere like Geelong or somewhere like Ballarat, Bendigo. And it actually, you kind of get a sense of how people actually live. The thing that was probably the first overwhelming view of Busan was actually the apartment buildings. Mm. There are, you know, hundreds of apartment buildings. They all look the same. They, you know, they're tall. They're, you know, 20, 30 stories high. There's multiple, you know, apartment blocks in the one area, and it's how people live. They're right up to the freeways, so you're kind of driving past people's apartments as you're going down the freeway. So it's quite highly populated, of course, and this is where people live. So they have their whole families and sometimes multi-generational families living in apartments, which is, you know, pretty interesting. So it's quite grey when you first look at it, but it's actually on the water. Mm. So it's very beautiful once you get down to the water and you actually start to walk around. The other thing about Busan is there is a real art culture in Busan. So when you go up to the more traditional living areas, there's a lot of art and craft, lots of artists living in residence there, lots of expats living there as well. But some of the people in Busan are actually living in fairly primitive accommodation. So there's the apartment blocks on one hand, but on the other hand, there are these small, tiny houses up a mountain where people are still carting water.
Right.
So, you know, you've kind of got the city, the industrialization of the city, and then you've got these very primitive housing, this whole kind of area, this whole district. And I was quite shocked because they have people in their 80s still carting water up the mountain to their house. Sewerage is also quite an issue in terms of getting rid of their waste.
Yeah,
so it was quite a contrast.
It can be too. I think for me, when I arrived in South Korea, I could not believe the amount of population they have squeezed into a tiny area, and this would also go for Busan as well as Seoul. There are skyrises everywhere and they're just packed full of people. We, David and myself, we booked an Airbnb and stayed in a very typical Korean apartment, and it was small, wasn't it?
Yeah, look, it was small, but that's to do with economy of space, and I suppose, you know, just as we see here in Melbourne, our population is certainly going up on the inner city. They don't have sprawl. They don't have sprawl in, I would expect, in any parts, even in regional towns. As we took the train, the fast train down to Busan, you don't see, you know, big cities with a whole lot of little houses such as we have here, and it's certainly a more modern way to live. You know, we stayed in a very small apartment, but it still had everything we needed, and it, you know, up on the 29th floor, looking out over a beautiful river and more apartments, I suppose. But yeah, you know, it's a different way of living, I suppose. And, you know, many of the mega cities around the world, and certainly Seoul is one of the mega cities, people certainly do live high rise, of course.
Now, Seoul, Korea itself is a very, very young country. It it only gained its independence from Japan in 1945, so it's it is a relatively new country. And in between then and now, they've had the Korean War, which lasted for 3 years. And there are two very distinct parts of Korea. There's North and South Korea. Did you get to the DMZ at all, Rhonda?
I actually chose not to go.
Every
tour you see of Korea, it's actually included. And for me, I'd read enough about it to probably not go. I thought it, I mean, I was concerned about the propaganda of that part of the tour in a sense, and so, but I understand it's quite interesting. Did you go, David?
No, look, I also chose not to. Now, I don't know, a lot of people probably think there's a fascination with 4 kilometres of open space. And look, mind you, I haven't seen it, but 4 kilometres of open space with fences, gun towers, guards, taking selfies in the world's most dangerous place, which is probably the world's safest place. didn't really think, you know, and I initially said to Russ, do you want to go to the DMZ zone? He said, yeah, I want to go to that. And I was sort of put off by people that had actually visited saying, you know what, it's not that big a deal. And it's also, you know, saying, well, you know, this is the place to go and check it out. There are so many more interesting and fascinating things to go and see in Seoul. There's a lot more to do than just a DMZ zone.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, one of the things that would have fascinated me was seeing the table in the DMZ. There's actually an oval table that has half the table in North Korea and half the tables in South Korea. And it's used for meetings of, and of course it hasn't been used very much as we know, and it's used for meetings of South Korean and North Korean officials, which is quite interesting. Apparently there's a line down the middle of the table. That would have been.
I know the Koreans that I've spoken to who talk about the demilitarised zone and they say, look, it is very commercial, but the only reason that they like to go there or tell people to go there is so people don't forget the people in North Korea. And on that basis, I kind of get it. I think on the basis of highlighting something that, you know, you don't want to advertise the fact, you don't want to make it into a tourist industry taking people to a war zone. But specifically, it's a nice idea when you come up with the fact we just don't want people to, there is people in North Korea who are starving and very unfortunate.
Joy 94.9 is on air 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. But sometimes you can't always be with us when you want to. Here's the solution. Here's the solution. Listen to your favourite Joy 94.9 show anytime with our Joy podcast service. Our team of over 30 volunteers pick out the best bits from around 60 programs that Joy airs each week, made available to you for free download. To find a podcast of your favourite Joy show, search for us in the featured providers section within the iTunes store, or find them on the Joy website, joy.org.au. Joy Podcasts. Any show, any show, anytime, joy.org.au.
You're on the Escape Hour with Fiona, Russ, Stefan, and our guest David Gale and Rhonda Brown, talking all things Korea.
So basically we've had an email in, which is a very good email. A lot of people do think about Japan and Korea in one trip. Financially, it certainly makes a lot of sense. Both the countries are very close to each other. This particular email is from Chris in South Yarra, and he mentions that he found Japan very clean and the culture quite different there to South Korea, which was seemed a bit grubby and second rate. And look, you know, first impressions on Korea, I guess, having been to both countries, yes, you're quite right there, Chris. Korea of sorts does take a little bit of getting used to. I know when I arrived there, I was more interested in doing things than if you just go to Seoul aesthetically, you're not going to see the beauty of Korea. Rhonda, what do you think?
I absolutely agree. You do need to get out of the cities. Korea is actually a beautiful, beautiful country. Lovely countryside. There's mountains, there's snow, there's contrasts. And I think, you know, if you only go to the cities, then that's all you get. And I think that's in any country, really. So you need to get out.
So you mentioned that in Busan you went out. What did you do when you were in Busan?
Yeah, so I think probably some of the more interesting parts of my trip were visiting some of the regional places where some of the temples and, you know, the Buddhist, there's a grotto about an hour out of Busan, which is really very interesting, a very spiritual place. It was very moving to actually go to. So I think you have to get out and you have to enjoy, and you get to meet people who are, you know, very proud of their country. I think that's something about Korea that I really was struck me, was that they're a very proud culture. They've got a really strong spirit. I mean, they've had to come back from fairly devastating occupation in previous, not so long ago, really. And that really inspired me. But it was when I met the people out in the regional areas where I actually started to talk to them about some of that, that I actually was really inspired in Korea. So I guess I can understand what Chris is talking about to some extent, but I think once you move out of the cities, you see a very different picture.
Yeah, what about like the natural beauty? I have not been there. So, I mean, getting out of the cities, what about, you know, forests? And I mean, it's a large country. What's going on outside of the city areas?
Well, I was actually in, I was there in winter, which has its own natural beauty. But I think if you were there in spring, you'd certainly see the cherry blossom. I mean, there is some discussion about whether the cherry blossom came from Japan or whether it came from Korea. We'll leave that for another day to discuss. But I think just picking up Chris's point, I think it's really important that you actually don't think about Korea as Japan. They are completely different cultures. Certainly there is influence in Korea from the Japanese occupation in Korea. Some of the food, there are some influences both ways, both between Korea and Japan, but they are not the same culture.
Okay. Well, I mean, there's so many things about Korean culture that I'd love to know more about, for example, from a creative and artistic. I mean, when you're in the cities, did anyone visit any museums or cultural sort of galleries? I'd love to know more about, you know, the creative side.
Yes, look, I think porcelain is, there's a lot of porcelain. Celeron, which is a green porcelain, is very traditional Korean. If you go to the Samsung Museum in Seoul, I could recommend that highly. It is owned by the Samsung family and certainly has one of the best art collections you'll see anywhere. But you get a really good sense of some of the culture there. Some of the wood carvings, some of the influences from their spirituality comes through in their art and craft as well. So I think it is certainly worth exploring some of the culture through those museums.
And then you've got the sporting culture. Baseball. Oh,
the baseball is sensational. Now, you know, everybody thinks of baseball and they think of the United States of America as the inventors of baseball. Maybe they did invent it. I don't know who invented it, but I can tell you the fans at the baseball in Korea would be similar to those in Japan as well. They have chants and they have songs for every single player. You've got two sides there. Russ and I arrived at a match with about 2 hours still to go. So a baseball match will go for about 5 hours. But the atmosphere was amazing. They were singing these songs. They had dancers. They had everything happening. You know, the game was incidental as well. I remember getting some it was cuttlefish, which looked like an orange disc of jelly of some sort, and they took a couple of these discs, put it into a sandwich maker and warmed it up and then rolled it up and snipped it up, and it was the perfect snack to have at baseball. Korean cuttlefish, I highly recommend it.
I'd go to the baseball just for that.
Just for that.
sounds incredible.
Look, it's a gelatinous, gooey snack, but, you know, watching the baseball and seeing these fans just going off. We were going for the Doosan Bears, who came in one run short. There is a little bit of action happening on the field as well, but the action off the field is sensational. They are so enthusiastic. I don't know whether the Koreans get absolutely smashed at the baseball. There was a lot of beer flowing as well, and we also noticed some people from overseas that were getting in the atmosphere as well. I was singing the songs with Russ. We were singing the same songs as these people.
Go on, give us a tune.
What they were doing was they'd taken an American song that they would change into a Korean song about their player, and we're just singing the English versions that we know, but they'd taken all of these songs, and it's great hearing these hits belted out with words that we have no idea what they were talking about, except that this player was the best and the greatest player in all history and all that sort of stuff. So, but the atmosphere, worth a visit. Just go for the last couple of hours. So, and beautiful, beautiful match to watch.
It's like when you go to the sumo wrestling in Japan, just go to the last hour. Because otherwise it would just be, that's plenty.
Yeah, yeah. Now, look, you know, it's funny, picking up on that point of Chris, my first impression, other than, you know, you arrive in the airport, flick on your Wi-Fi, bang, you're connected. There's no emails, there's no advertising, there's no anything. It's just you're connected. And the society is sophisticated. You're connected all the time. We bought like $25 SIM cards that covered us for everything for 5 days with, you know, ridiculous download capabilities. So as far as getting around, you can use your maps, you can use any of your search browsers or engines that you want to use. You're connected all the time in Seoul. You can be in the deepest, darkest underground railway platform. You can be on a 270-kilometre-an-hour train going to and from Busan. You can be asleep. Wherever you are, you're going to be connected. So that's a great plus for tourists, because trying to get maps and things like that in a country, and you might be using up your limited data that you've brought from Australia or using a plan that says, don't worry about plans. Get a SIM card and just know that you're going to be connected everywhere you go in Korea. So they're a very modern and sophisticated society. I found you know, Russ and I were trying not to use the T word Tokyo because I did find it very similar in a sense of transport and efficiency. I think it was very clean, so I disagree with Chris saying that it was a bit grubby and second rate. It's a sparkling place and very efficient. But at the same time, the people actually seem a bit more relaxed. They seem happier than the Japanese. The Japanese, you know, have gone through, what, 10 to 15 years of deflation. Their economy is not doing very well. The Koreans are flying high and...
just, you know, like their internet.
Yeah, exactly.
Fastest internet in the world.
Faster than their internet. I came home and I was downloading something on my phone and I'm just going, will you hurry up? And it was just that, you know, that short period of going, this is the world's best, and then I've come home to, you know, an ageing system that isn't even up to date. You know, the people seemed happier. They certainly were social and, getting on with life.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
You're on the Escape Hour with Russ, Fiona, Stefan and our guest David Gale and Rhonda Brown. We're talking all things kimchi and Korea. You were saying you went to a baseball game and had this weird snack that...
Cuttlefish.
Orange cuttlefish, which doesn't sound... very appealing.
It's salty,
but
it's gooey and delicious.
Okay. And you had beer with that?
Yeah. Well, look, I don't drink, but there were people drinking beer all around the stadium. So, you know, it's a big social night out. People go with their friends and...
The Koreans do have a high consumption of alcohol. Now, Rhonda, on the other hand, will be a person who will talk about soju, which is fabulous, isn't it, Rhonda?
Oh, absolutely fabulous. There are varying grades, really, but it is really like vodka, and it's consumed in large quantities. You can buy soju in the bottle in any cafe, restaurant, or milk bar you go to. It's cheaper than water, so Koreans like to drink it. I was actually off with a guide, so I got to try lots of varying levels of soju. You've got to be careful. Soju doesn't taste very much, but it actually has a kick.
It's got a bit of a punch, I think.
Lots of hangovers. I didn't have any, fortunately. Yeah. But
Give any to Fiona Brooke. She'd be God knows where by the end of the night.
Well, we'd have to work out who's the eldest as well, because the Fiona eldest Brooke has to drink first. So the eldest drinks before Fiona the youngest.
Fiona always seems to be the oldest when we go out.
Well, that was my downfall in Korea.
Was it?
My guide was younger than I was, so he continued to insist that I drank first, so I had to be very careful.
Okay, but you made it, obviously.
Oh, I did make it at the end. I was probably more fortified than the kimchi.
Now, you know what? Well, that's one way of describing your trip to South Korea. I love it. One of the things that I really enjoyed doing when I was there was going to actually a Korean barbecue. Now, I had been to a Korean barbecue here in Melbourne, and, you know, we took the all-you-could-eat meat option. It was very filling. But we went to just a local restaurant and they had these barbecues. And, David, you were impressed by the way you could make your little egg omelette around the outskirts.
Yeah, look, it was amazing because they have a cast iron plate that they put into the middle of the table where the coals are and a little moat going around it. And you could pour your little omelette mixture in there and put a few little vegetables in there and, you know, barbecue meat and maybe a few other things on the top of the griddle. And then you'd pick up a leaf and put everything into the middle of that and eat it that way. Tear up a few herbs and things like that. Really delicious Korean barbecue, but there's all different styles as well, just as there are in all of their dishes. And of course, fried chicken is a very, very big thing in South Korea as well. Fried chicken is just one of the major staples. So certainly at the baseball, people were eating fried chicken along with cuttlefish and whatever else. But, you know, you've got to try these things. You've got to try everything in any country you visit. I think anybody on the Escape Pod would agree. You know, it's getting out there and seeing what the locals eat. And
would there be any option for vegetarians?
Well, yes, you've got your omelette.
And the kimchi.
You've got plenty of kimchi.
And they don't need anything to eat once they've had all that soju anyway, do they, really?
No, they do Korean pancakes, and you could put virtually into Korean pancake. In fact, Russ and I went to a cooking class, so he's probably kept it secret, but he is now an expert Korean chef. In fact, I'm surprised that he didn't bring in a Korean barbecue or a Korean pancake today.
No, we had Rhonda in here. It was too demanding. I felt very nervous just bringing in the kimchi.
The cooking class class was great fun because, once again, it was all fresh ingredients.
Well, we met a lovely, lovely lady. What was her name? Joey?
Her name was...
Joey or something. I can't remember. Yes, and anyway, we went to her house. She picked us up at Seoul Railway Station. We went to her house. She had all the ingredients and we made a bibimbap.
Yes.
And we made a seafood pancake. And we made a fabulous dessert, which was almond and sugar dumplings.
Yeah,
and
it was fantastic,
absolutely a fabulous experience. And she would actually, you know, help us measure and do all of the cooking. And it was just such a wonderful experience. We've got the recipes. So
yes,
I can post them.
I'm waiting for my recipes.
I'll post those on our website, our Facebook page, if anyone would like to make a bibimbap bop.
So what's a bibimbap bop?
Well, how do you begin, David? You were there. You made it.
Well, it's a rice dish with gorgeous things in it, and you arrange them around, and then you eat them, and they're sizzling, and they're delicious. But there are different styles, because we did have, I think on our first night, we had a bibimbap. Anyway, we had one in a restaurant, and they came out on a sizzling griddle as well, and that was absolutely divine, topped with some dried seaweed, if I remember correctly.
That was beautiful, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I just can't believe that we, you know, I'm not much of a chef, so it was very easy to cook and anybody could make it. Rhonda, what was your favourite food? I know we do talk about food when we travel, but that's what you do.
Street food, really, I think, was some of my favourite. Certainly the baps. So bap is basically Korean for rice, so there's a lot of rice. Rice is with every meal. And so it's either a side dish or it's actually the basis of the bibimbap that you've talked about. But there was a particular pastry on the streets, or it was really it's like a Korean pancake or a Korean, or perhaps it's the Korean version of the donut, really. So it's just a wheat, like a little bun, and it often has red beans in it, and it actually often has hazelnuts in it. And I went back to those many, many times. So I'm ashamed to say it was actually the sweet street food that got me.
So you're a sweet tooth and you like soju?
Not particularly, but
today,
I did like those.
Okay. And also they'd go very well with all of the coffee. There is great coffee culture there. In fact, one of our guides actually mentioned that, you know, some of the large American chains came in with coffee, and then suddenly a lot of Koreans started thinking, we can open up coffee shops. We actually visited one extraordinarily hip cafe, which actually was an old printing press where they'd done printing for decades. And there was an old printing press downstairs and then three more floors above there where you could order coffee and sit around. And it was a beautifully architecturally designed building that had been burnt out, and it would have fit in Melbourne like you wouldn't believe. And their coffee is good. There's also lots of takeaway coffee in little tins, which I think many people would be familiar with all throughout Asia, where you can get reasonably well-known brands. But their coffee in tins, in cans, is sensational. And the coffee in the cafes, I think Russ drank quite a lot of coffee.
Iced coffee. Well, we were there during the middle of summer, and can I say hot?
Only
so hot. It was 35 degrees, but 100% humidity now.
You know,
look, I'm sorry. Yeah, it was very hot. I'm sorry, but I do remember you walking down the street on one of our walking tours, and you said I was going to pass out.
Well, not quite, but I was looking for some liquid of some sort. Otherwise, I would have passed out. But then we discovered this coffee shop, which is sensational.
The best time to go to Korea, by the way, is either in spring or autumn. It is a very unusually hot summer. I found it very muggy, very hot. Not that it stopped me from enjoying myself. You just have to hydrate during with that kind of heat. But, Rhonda, you went during winter. So how did you find that? Was it unbearably cold? Or
I was lucky. I was there at the start of December, and it's often much, much colder. So it was probably, you know, 6 degrees max most days. Often didn't get to that till 3 or 4 in the afternoon. So you do have to rug up. It is a cold, because it's north, you know, it's right near the, you know, there's a lot of Alps and mountains in Korea. So if you go in winter, I mean, I don't think it's the best time to go. The best part, of course, is there's no lineup at any of the palaces or temples or any of the major attractions, because most people don't go. If I was going to go again, I'd go during the cherry blossom time during spring.
Beautiful.
I think I could see how that could be.
So you'd be looking at maybe March or something like that?
Yes. The other time would go is during autumn, because of the mountains and most of their trees are deciduous. I think it would be beautiful. It'd be stunning. Lots of maples and those sorts of really vibrant colours in trees.
And this is the secret about South Korea that is very important. You know, David and I went, and we simply went to Seoul and Busan. Now, Seoul, when you go to Seoul Sky Tower and you have a look at this sprawling mega
metropolis. You just cannot believe how big this city is and how many skyscrapers there are, and there's 50 million people, and you just are gobsmacked by the whole thing. Whereas, Rhonda, you did what I would love to do on my next trip to Korea and go out to the countryside, and that's where the real beauty is, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And if you're a walker, you're in heaven, really. There's many, many walking trails. That's one of Korea's favourite pastimes, is bushwalking or mountain walking. Even in the city, even in Seoul, there are mountains in Seoul, just off the from the CBD, really. Uh-huh. And people are walking up those mountains on their day off. They only get one day off a week, which is often Sunday. And what they do is they walk to the top of the mountain for lunch and they walk down again. You know, that might be an eight-hour day. So it's 4 hour up and 4 hour down.
It's certainly a greener city than Tokyo because of these small little mountains or little hills sort of thing where they haven't built. So there's quite a lot of greenery throughout all of Seoul, which actually makes it quite pretty in a certain way. And, you know, we had a very quick experience. But, I mean, that's the other thing is that you can go to Korea and just have a little taste of it. And I certainly want to go back and see more again. Or you can go for a longer stay. So it's great for either a short or a longer stay because there is so much to explore that although we only scratched the surface, I've certainly got the taste. And, you know, being a very easy city, it's definitely safe. It's easy to get around by public transport, or of course you can always get taxis, which aren't expensive either. And there's certainly enough to keep your interest, whether you want to do experiences in the major cities or in the country. As I say, they're a very sophisticated country, and there's plenty to actually see and do that if you want to spend a longer period there, you can certainly fill your time and even relax, or you can just go and have a little taste of Seoul and enjoy it for a short escape as well. It's not very expensive to get there, is it, Russ?
No, look, airfares at the moment are all-time low straight across the board, so you can get there from $699 to $799, so there's no reason not to visit this unique, very unique part of Asia. Stefan, you've not been to South Korea.
No.
So what would your question be to Rhonda or David about what do you think you'd like to know?
I think I'm quite interested in kind of a short, if I go for a short period, do I need to go to Seoul or do a kind of couple of centres like you did Seoul, Busan? What would you recommend if I want to go there for 5 days?
Well, I mean, you know, I can talk about Seoul and I think I could spend probably a couple of weeks trying to discover Seoul. So it would be just a surface trip and maybe go and see some of the major monuments and, you know, experience some of their everyday life. There's also great neighbourhoods within Seoul, such as Hongdae and Issedong. And you can check out those, which, you know, are pretty touristy. But back in Sedong, we actually found a little 100-year-old tea house, which was right at the very end of an alley behind all of the facades of a restaurant, of different restaurants going down this little alley. And you see a taste of another country or of an older country. This place was 100 years old and we just had a tea. So there's lots of little experiences in those neighbourhoods that you could enjoy. But, you know, if you want to go and see some of the other coastal towns, they're very easy to get to by fast train.
Fast train, yeah.
Yeah, and that's the fast trains are not ridiculously expensive. It is certainly cheaper than flying around. And then, of course, you've got the whole experience of going through the airport and security and everything else. So the trains are fast to get around as well.
What did you think of PT, Rhonda?
Oh, yeah, easy. It was easy to get around. I thought it was great.
I'm quite interested in this cooking class.
Yes.
So how did you decide to... How easy it is to find a cooking class? Because that's something I really don't enjoy doing when I go away.
Well, I think interesting you should say that, Stefan, because there is a new thing called Airbnb experiences, and we're not allowed to promote anything, of course, but it's something that Airbnb have decided to do that they're going to promote. People can live in a particular place and they can design an experience. They go through the process of offering it on Airbnb, and the next minute, Fomfit's up there, and you can buy it. Now, some of them are very good.
Some of them are dreadful as well.
Oh my God! Tell them about the dreadful one.
We did a market tour, which was actually not through a food market. It was actually through a produce market, and this guy was so hip; he was just too hip to be true. And he was showing us some little artist studios, which was really quite nice. But he was also showing us some old stores where people still sold cassette decks and tape recorders and things like that. it really didn't interest us. But at the same time, you know, we finished that tour in an amazing market area where we had a great lunch with some real characters that were producing wonderful food for lunch. But then, you know, the cooking school was great. We also...
Perfume school?
We went to a perfume school that was sensational. I'll give you a little smell of my perfume later on.
We can smell it from here. We can smell it from here.
It smells a bit like a car freshener. I knew I could smell
something. No, it smells like, you know, but, toilet duck, actually, I'm calling it.
And in fact, Russ and I do travel quite a bit, and we usually stay in hotels, but this was an Airbnb experience, which was great as well.
Rhonda, back to you. What would you recommend be your highlights of Korea, and what should people go and see there?
I think in answer to Stefan's question, if you're going there for a short time, I think you can go to Seoul and you can get a whole experience there. You can get a cultural experience, you can get a spiritual experience, you can get the food experience, you can get the local experience as well as the big city. So I think Seoul really has it all.
Yes.
I think I'd certainly do that. But if you actually are going to go, I'd recommend you get out of Seoul and go into the countryside and actually visit some of the more traditional temples, traditional houses. Perhaps in Seoul, go to Hanok Village and visit one of the houses. You can actually stay in a hanok overnight, which is a traditional Korean house. I think that's an experience that's worth having.
That sounds fantastic. Now, Stefan, you've got a question
for
Rhonda,
which is very important. David.
Oh, yes, that's right.
Do you fold or roll when you travel? Your clothes.
I do a bit of both. I find rolling actually does take, you can actually pack a lot more in.
Okay. Oh, well, and that's a roller. There's a roller for you.
So we've got one roller.
Look, preparation is the key to any adventure. So I just chuck everything I can into a bag.
Into a tote.
Choosing the right size bag. We did carry on for this trip. But at the same time, you know, you don't want to take too much. Most of us are going to buy stuff when we're wherever we are. And in the end, prices are international. So, you know, if you haven't got a piece of clothing, just buy one.
So you just chuck things in a bag. You don't fold, you don't roll.
Chuck it in.
It's been great having you two on today, Fiona. Who's on next week?
We have a return visitor next week.
Oh, we do?
The magical Nigella.
Oh, we've got Nigella Lawson on next week.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Tune in next week.
Tune in next week, everyone.
Rhonda, thank
you
for being on
our
show today.
Everyone.
It's been an absolute pleasure having you on.
Oh, it's been a blast. Thanks for inviting me.
Thanks, David.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.